right, everybody. Welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm your host, Philip Drew, Administrator. And our next guest also writes for LouRockwell.com. His name is Anthony Gregory. He works and writes for the Independent Institute in Oakland. Writes for, as I said, LouRockwell.com, Rational Review, Strike the Root, occasionally for Antiwar.com, my favorite, and Liberty Magazine and the Libertarian Enterprise. I brought him on to discuss an article he wrote about the Bill of Rights for LouRockwell.com last week called Bush's War on the Bill of Rights. Welcome to the show, Anthony.
Hi, Philip. Thanks for having me on.
It's an honor. I should ask you first, how does Bush compare to other presidents when it comes to violating people's constitutionally protected rights?
Well, he's a fairly terrible president in that regard, but he's not the worst, I would say. The first article I wrote for Lou Rockwell was called Our Current Bill of Rights Erosion is Unprecedented. And my argument was that the Bill of Rights erosions and violations we're seeing today, as bad as they are, have their precedents in history. There have been previous administrations who have violated the Constitution in myriad ways. Abraham Lincoln did it. Woodrow Wilson did it. Franklin Roosevelt certainly did it. And many others did it. And actually, they probably all did it, but those are just the ones that probably did it the worst. There are others who are particularly bad. So I wouldn't say Bush is the worst, but in recent history, I'd say that he's probably the worst since the Vietnam War.
Well, and before we get into the substance of the Bill of Rights here, I think we ought to probably set up, what exactly is the Bill of Rights? How did it end up part of the American Constitution? And what is its purpose?
Well, as the story goes, you know, after the American Revolution, they had the Articles of Confederation as kind of a working document from which to have a government. It arguably wasn't even a government, but kind of a compact between the states, each of which was kind of a separate government. And the traditional story is that there wasn't enough central authority, and that's why you had certain problems like Shays' Rebellion. I don't buy that argument, but at any rate, it won the day, and they established a constitution, but a lot of people called the anti-federalists, which is itself is kind of a misnomer. They didn't like the idea of the federal government having all this power because they didn't want it to violate the rights of the American people the way that England has. So they wanted a Bill of Rights, which also is a misnomer in some ways. The Bill of Rights, rather than a document that lays out what rights we have, it lays out what rights the government's not allowed to restrict. And it's actually kind of a bill of limitations on the federal government, and some would say the state government. But essentially, it was meant to restrict the government from violating the rights of Americans in the way that the British government has.
I think that's a very interesting point, too, about it being a bill of restrictions rather than a bill of rights. In fact, I think Hamilton argued against its ratification by saying, but wait, a bill of rights is something that a king would give his subjects. You guys give us our powers. You know what your rights are. You don't want a bill of rights. You're going to turn the whole thing inside out.
Yeah, that's a good point. Now, I'm no big fan of Hamilton, but he had a, I don't know how cynical he was being, but he was kind of trying to show a contradiction that he thought the anti-federalists had, which was that the anti-federalists wanted a constitution of, if they wanted one at all, that had enumerated powers for the government beyond which the government could enact. And the argument against the Bill of Rights that was made by people that we, if we assume they weren't cynical, in the name of liberty was, if you list the rights that government that we have as people, then the government's going to trash rights that aren't listed. And that's the reason that the Ninth Amendment was included and the Tenth Amendment, which kind of put it all together and clarified.
Right. Well,
that
we'll get to those.
Yeah, we will.
But also, I don't know if you know this, it's often omitted from any copy of the Bill of Rights. In fact, I hold a copy of the Constitution in my hand right here, and it's not here, but the original preamble to the Bill of Rights says that these are declaratory and restrictive clauses to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers on the part of the new government. So it made it very clear from its beginning that as you say, it was a list of restrictions against the state by the people rather than a grant of freedom from the state to the people.
Right. It doesn't say the people have the freedom of speech. That's a given. It says the government can't restrict the freedom of speech. The government can't take our guns away. The rights, the existence of rights in the natural law sort of mentality pre-exists government. The Bill of Rights was established to limit government, not to grant rights by any means. The government can't grant us rights. It can, in theory, protect them, and it, in practice, squanders them and violates them. But the Bill of Rights is far from some sort of document giving us rights.
All right, well, let's get started with Amendment Number 1 here. It says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. How has George right. Bush violated this amendment?
Oh, well, he's violated in a lot of ways.
Your time. We have an hour here.
Okay. Well, liberals would probably point out, and or at least some of them, the more principled ones, would point out that the federal government shouldn't be in the business of combating so-called indecency. And what we have with Howard Stern losing his contract with Clear Channel because Clear Channel was hassled by the FCC, the FCC doing all this moral posturing by investigating Janet Jackson's exposed breast at the Super Bowl halftime show. Those are examples. At wartime, we see restrictions of freedom of speech elevated. And I would consider the forbidding of photography of the flag-draped casket returning home from Iraq and other restrictions on the press to be violations of the press. Now, one area that I'm particularly disturbed about in which Bush has violated our freedom of speech is he signed the bipartisan campaign finance reform bill, which conservatives have often said in trying to appeal to the more libertarian among us that the campaign restrictions on campaigns are a violation of political speech rights. And this law that he signed is particularly bad. It makes it a crime for nonprofit groups of certain types even to mention the name of a national candidate before 60 days before a general election, and I believe 30 days before a primary. I mean, just the idea of not being able to say a name. This was made the Founding Fathers, maybe even the Hamiltons of the Founding Fathers, very distressed. Well, until they had power, we know the Federalists, or some of us know the Federalists by John Adams started restricting speech in a number of ways in political speech. But this campaign finance law, I think, is one of the greatest assaults on our freedom of speech. It really affects us. It's not just, we're not just talking about hypothetical, idealistic freedoms here. This really affects us. And I read that Bush knew that it violated the Constitution, and he signed it anyway, thinking the Supreme Court would overturn the law's worst provisions. Well, that's a terrible dereliction of duty, and the First Amendment specifically singles out Congress, and it says Congress shall make no law. Well, I think that when Congress makes such a law, it's committing a crime under the Bill of Rights. So that's another example, and I mentioned wartime violations of free speech, and I mean, now in America, we have the famed free speech zones, and when Bush appears on camera in public, they isolate his protesters and his detractors so they're off camera. And we've had protests being disrupted by local police Now, some people think that the First Amendment should only apply to the federal government. It singles out Congress. But things have become so nationalized, including law enforcement, and certainly the Iraq War is a national policy. So I am very distressed by the reports of here in the East Bay, where I live in Oakland, there was a protest last year around the start of the war, and police came by and they shot the protesters with wooden bullets and with concussion grenades, and they even accidentally hit some dock workers too, and they caused huge welts and shattered bones and injuries. I think that's an assault on the right to protest.
If you count the faith-based initiatives of subsidizing charities through churches and that kind of thing, really only the free exercise clause of the Constitution or of the First Amendment has he left alone. The other four he's violated.
Right, and I'm sure if we wanted to get into a nuanced argument, we could find ways in which that's been violated too. I happen to think that if the Bill of Rights were stringently followed, almost everything the government does now, it couldn't do. And so I'm sure that part of the amendment has been violated too. But we probably shouldn't get into it. But you're right. But basically, the whole First Amendment has been trashed by the current administration. It's very sad.
The Second Amendment says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Has it been infringed, Mr. Graham?
Oh, it's been infringed. You know, this is one issue where the conservatives and the Republicans like to pose as they like to pretend to be the friends of the gun owners. And it can be argued that the Democrats are, at least ideologically, worse on the gun rights issue than the conservatives. But in effect, you know, the Republicans and the NRA, they seem to have this opinion that there are 20,000 or so gun laws in America that violate the Second Amendment, and instead of passing more laws, we should enforce those more stringently. And they have. The Bush administration under our good friend Attorney General Ashcroft they brag in some of their press releases that they've increased the number of convictions and accusations for these firearms laws. The Bush administration asked for $95 million this year to spend on more gun control programs. And so the only thing that can be said for them is possibly, if Democrats controlled the entire Congress and the presidency, maybe our gun rights would be even more eroded right now. That could be argued. I'm not even sure about that, but certainly our gun rights have been more eroded during this administration than the last. It's gotten steadily worse. Other examples are the arming of airline pilots. Now, I think that airlines, as private companies, should basically maintain their own security. And I think that 9/11 showed a massive government failure on many fronts, including the airport security, which is regulated throughout. And
of course, their solution was to completely nationalize it.
Yeah, their solution was to take the same employees, essentially, and give them federal jobs. So if any of them did anything incompetent, they'd be even harder to fire. But, that's how their solutions usually are. But there was a modest step in the right direction proposed that airline pilots should be allowed to have guns on planes. And Bush seemed to oppose it. Congress passed it, passed the law to allow airline pilots to carry guns on planes, and he refused to implement it. eventually Congress and the Senate had to vote by a supermajority to basically force the administration to implement it.
Well, and I want to say here, just for people in the audience who are saying, oh, no, you can't fire a gun on the plane. Everyone will die from the decompression. I saw the Mythbusters on the Learning Channel did their experiment and shot out the windows and all that of a pressurized plane. And no, in fact, it would take a bomb to catastrophically depressurize a plane. A 9mm going off in the cabin is no big deal.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, people used to be allowed to carry guns on planes. 35 years ago or so, the airplane experience was completely different. Now you have to wait in line for hours, and you might have to undergo a humiliating search, and you can't carry toenail clippers on, practically. There are all these stories about people trying to carry toenail clippers and being stopped. Meanwhile, they sell toenail clippers in the airport gift shop. But you used to be able to carry guns on planes, and I've looked and looked, and I haven't found a single catastrophe that resulted. Now, certainly, that's not to say it couldn't happen. There could be a disaster that would ensue from someone having a gun on the plane, but that's a risk that exists everywhere, and it's 9/11, the way it happened, it couldn't have happened if just someone, one of the good guys on those planes, had firearms. It just wouldn't have happened, and the 3,000 Americans who were murdered on that day would have been alive. And I think that even in the unlikely event of a catastrophe, it wouldn't compare to that catastrophe, which was in part a result of our insane gun control policies.
He's also promised to renew the assault weapons ban coming up this September, right?
Yeah, he was applauded by Dianne Feinstein and Chuck Schumer, who are rightly deplored for their anti-Second Amendment stance. But they applauded his willingness to renew it. Now, it's up in the air whether it's actually going to be renewed, because recently in the Senate, they tried to renew it, but then the Republicans tried to pass this other law which would have forbid people from suing gun manufacturers, and no one was happy with the package deal, so I think it only got one or two votes and it failed. But it could happen. Certainly Bush doesn't have any principled stand against gun control, and his administration has enforced laws against gun rights more than the Clinton administration has.
Well, and a note for Karl Rove, if you're listening, bud, you want to kill your incumbent's chance of re-election, go ahead and re-sign that assault weapons ban right before and make sure that your base constituency stays home that day.
Yeah. I'm sure
Karl
Rove
listens to this show.
I'm sure he does and takes notes. But I've heard some people say that if the Democrats ever embrace gun rights, or at least become more favorable toward gun rights than Republicans, they would snatch up a lot of the kind of middle ground voters. There are a lot of union voters and other people who are kind of half conservative, half liberal, or they vote one way or the other depending on the election. And a lot of there's something like 50 or 70 million gun owners in America. It's something like that, and that's a huge constituency. And Bush he's done a terrible job. Now Republicans have often been fairly bad on gun control. In California, where I live, which is known throughout the country as having some of the worst gun laws. Those gun laws were pushed through by conservatives, or people who call them conservatives. We shouldn't get into that debate just yet, if at all, but of what a conservative is, but Republicans. And, George Bush Sr. was willing to expand gun control, and the Republicans, it's all politics, and they'll vote in a way so the ones that need their pro-gun constituents will vote against the gun law, but the rights of the people to keep and bear arms has just been eviscerated over the years, and the Republicans have been conspirators in that evisceration.
I'm Philip Drew, and I'm interviewing Anthony Gregory. He writes for Strike the Root and LouRockwell.com. We're going over the Bill of Rights and the ways that it has been violated by the Bush administration. Now, Amendment number 3, Mr. Gregory, says, "No soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law." Has that been violated by the Bush administration? Have we had an amendment that they haven't screwed up?
The Third Amendment is one that people use to point out that the Constitution is no law, has no relevance today, because they say, you know, they never put soldiers in our homes. Well, we got to remember the Third Amendment, like the rest of the Bill of Rights, was established after the American Revolution. And the people who were pushing for the Bill of Rights, they had fresh in their memory from just a little over 20 years ago, the Quartering Act of 1765, which was the inspiration of this, which was when the British government forced American colonists to house troops and also to pay for the housing of troops. It was also a tax law. So I look over at what the U.S. is doing in Iraq, you know, the levying taxes on us, and even on Iraq, it's establishing taxes. And it's using it to pay for what I think the Founding Fathers would have considered an imperial mission. So the spirit of the Third Amendment has taken many beatings over the years. The idea of the soldiers actually being quartered in our homes here in America is probably less likely. I hope it doesn't happen, but that's probably less likely. They don't really need that, because now they have income tax and they have the Federal Reserve, so they can print and confiscate all the money they want to build their own homes.
Right, they can just build a garrison right down the street from us and make us pay for it. And meanwhile,
right,
invite our local cops to train at their military bases.
Right, right. And so I'd say that the Third Amendment, we could talk more and more about this, but I'd say that the Third Amendment, the spirit of the Third Amendment, the meaning that is, the context in which it was written has been, the Bush administration has turned its back on that one. But that one's a little tougher to really nail down.
Right. Well, and really its purpose nowadays is to re-express the notion of civilian supremacy over the military, and that they exist to protect us from foreign killers, not to be our rulers. And
right,
that's a very important point, especially nowadays, I think.
Right. And, you know, there have been times that the U.S. military has been used against American civilians on American soil. I can't think of any examples in the Bush administration, but the Third Amendment, if it hasn't been violated in letter, we better hope that it isn't, because the rest of the Bill of Rights clearly has been violated. And the Third Amendment might be the last one that we see go completely.
Well, and speaking of that, Amendment number 4 says, "The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized."
So that one's out the window. The Fourth Amendment is really gone. I mean, it's taken so many beatings over the years, especially with gun control laws and the war on drugs and other policies, tax policies and all kinds of other government policies that rely on being able to search people and to search their homes. But if there was any strength in the Fourth Amendment, it's gone. I mean, they don't search all of us all the time, but in principle, they've established the precedent. The Patriot Act is an abomination. It allows feds to come into our homes and search our residences and put things into our computers and look into our financial records and not even tell us for 6 months. And it's, you know, the Federal Intelligence Surveillance Act has been expanded so they can it has expanded the power of the government to get easy wiretap warrants from special courts.
Why don't you explain that a little bit? What exactly is the Federal Intelligence Surveillance Act? I'm sorry, I screwed up. The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act.
Wiretaps have always been kind of a strange issue because for some reason people think that when the Fourth Amendment or any of these amendments mentions persons, houses, papers, and effects, it doesn't apply to modern technology. And as technology has increased, they've found all kinds of loopholes to, you know, spy on our conversations on our phone and on our email. And wiretaps is just something that they've always had to get a warrant for, probably a lot of the time under false or questionable pretenses. But now they have these special courts, which they're not subject to the same oversight. I'm not the best expert on the wiretap issue. I would suggest that anyone who's interested in how the war on terrorism is violating our civil liberties to get a book by James Bovard called Terrorism and Tyranny, which is one of my favorite books of recent years that really goes through all of this stuff. And there are more details in there than I'm sure I can't remember. But basically, it's easier for them to get wiretaps. Now, so far, some of these provisions haven't been, as conservatives would say, they haven't been abused. But they've been used, and they haven't really apprehended as many terrorists as they've harassed innocent people. And the fact is, now the floodgates are open, and they can be abused in the future.
Also, you wrote in your column that 10% of libraries have been searched by the Department of Justice?
Yeah, that was after 9/11. You know, there was the sneak and peek provision, which I believe has been taken out of the Patriot Act. But
I don't think anything's been taken out of it. I guess I remember a judge struck down something. Was it the library thing?
I think that Congress voted to maybe it wasn't ratified by Bush doesn't veto anything, so. Or maybe they just refuse to fund it. A lot of damage has already been done, and I imagine it will continue to be done, even if they change some language here and there. Basically, the sneak and peek provision allowed the FBI to obtain library records from librarians, go around to all the libraries, public libraries, and ask them who has checked out what books. Now, this was considered by many civil libertarians to be among the worst of the Patriot Act provisions. I think the whole Patriot Act is despicable. This provision, to me, it's not the most offensive, but I'm certainly opposed to it. I haven't looked too deeply into the sneak and peek provision because so much has happened. Since 9/11, so much has happened with the Patriot Act and with other laws that have been passed and other executive orders that I haven't focused too much on the sneak and peek provision.
Well, another thing they've done that violates the Fourth Amendment, and I think they already had this to some degree, but especially after the Patriot Act, they have this thing now called administrative warrants, where instead of going to an Article III independent judge, basically one cop asks another cop, "Hey, can I have a warrant?" And he says, "Yeah, sure." It works just as good as one signed by a judge.
Right, and I think that people don't really pay attention to what the Fourth Amendment says. It says, no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, comma, supported by oath or affirmation, comma, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. They can't just get a warrant saying we think this guy is up to no good, or we think this guy... is a terrorist. They have to have some idea of what they're going to find and who they're going to find. And someone has to swear an oath or there has to be some affirmation. Ideally, someone should have to put his job on the line and say, look, we know that there are that we're going to find this evidence that that would implicate these people in some sort of vicious crime, and I'm willing to swear an oath. And when you swear an oath and you're wrong, or you were wrong deliberately, that's called perjury. But, you know, officials make these oaths all the time, and it's not considered perjury. I mean, Bush swore an oath to uphold the Constitution, and he hasn't done a very good job on that.
That really is a fundamental flaw in the Constitution, don't you think, that there really is, there's no teeth in there. It says they can't do this and they can't do that, but there's nothing that says a congressman shall hang from his neck if he passes a law that says this or that even they'll lose their job.
Well, yeah, that's right.
It's
a matter of accountability. I tend to think the Constitution, I mean, I'm no Constitution fetishist. I don't think that the Constitution is, I don't revere it the way some people do, especially the body. I like the Bill of Rights because it limits the government, but there are all kinds of things the Constitution itself allows the government to do that I don't think that the government needs to do or should do. But the reason that I focus on the Bill of Rights, even though I don't think the Constitution is the end-all be-all, is because if the government's going to exist and operate and establish all these laws for us to follow, it should follow its own laws. And the Bill of Rights was kind of the people's end of the deal. Okay, we'll put up with having this national government, but you put up with these restrictions. And you're right that the Constitution doesn't establish a self-enforcing clause of any type. And, you know, many have argued that it should. Maybe it should. I don't really know if that would do it. I think that really what's important is to change people's hearts and minds about these issues, and to get people oriented towards a certain a principle in which they're less inclined to have so much faith in the state itself. I think that's what's important. I only focus on the Bill of Rights to help illustrate the fact that the government doesn't follow its own law. If the First Amendment said Congress shall make laws respecting an establishment of religion, or the Second Amendment said Congress shall outlaw firearms, I wouldn't have any, I wouldn't think that that's right. I don't think that what the Constitution says is right, morally or practically. But the Bill of Rights as it stands is a fairly good document, and it creates a framework for a fairly free society. And again, it illustrates the hypocrisy of the state that expects us to follow its laws when it violates its own.
That's really the fundamental bottom line there. Is it simply a contract? Whether you even think it's a very good contract or not, Article 1, 2, and 3 allow these people's positions to exist, so they ought to have to go by what the rest of it says.
Right.
No buts about it. All right,
yeah,
number five, Mr. Gregory, says, no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia when in actual service in time of war or public danger. Nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Have there been violations of the Fifth Amendment by this administration?
Oh, certainly. Well, shortly after 9/11, the INS and Justice Department detained more than 1,000 people. Bush called them terrorists. They were called terrorists on the news repeatedly. But then, that was even after the Justice Department admitted that the detainees didn't have any terrorist ties. So they were being detained without due process. There's also this material witness status, where about a dozen at least, or dozens rather, of Americans were detained without any due process because they were, quote, material witnesses. So since 9/11, the government has come up with even more and more ways of getting around the Fifth Amendment, so to speak. I mean, it had in the past, but it's become very egregious lately. Also, the asset forfeiture is something that I think it smacks of un-Americanism, where the federal government or state and local governments, but in this case the federal government specifically, can just, instead of accusing you of a crime, they could just accuse your property of a crime, or they could say it's a civil case, and they could just take your property. They could take your home, your business, your airplane.
That can't be right. You must be mistaken. You're talking about some law in Germany or somewhere in medieval Europe, right?
Well, I wish I were. Unfortunately, this is really true. And you know, people say, well, you know, we're talking about drug dealers and we're talking about terrorists. And that's not even true. 80% or so of the time that they use civil asset forfeiture, no one's even accused of a crime. And the doctrine of asset forfeiture has been expanded in some ways under Bush. Now people who smuggle, as it's called, their own money out of the country, if you take more than $10,000 in cash out of the country without filling out the form, they can just confiscate it. And he's also expanded the powers of eminent domain, which is when the government just takes your property for so-called public use. He expanded this for the case of electrical lines running interstate. Now, some people say that eminent domain's okay because the Fifth Amendment says that property can't be taken for public use without just compensation, implying that it can with just compensation. But a lot of the time, there's not anything close to just compensation. And a lot of the time, they don't use it for anything that I would consider public use, that I don't think anyone sane would consider public use. Now, there's this new precedent. This is outrageous, where they can take your property and give it to a business that they think will raise more tax revenue for the state. And they say, well, taxes are a public good. So if you have some home that's not producing much tax revenue, they could just take it and they can give it to IKEA or whatnot. And that's just despicable. And that's happened under the Bush administration.
Well, and the doctrine of eminent domain really means, by definition, that the land belongs to the collective and the state first and to you second. That's what's eminent about it, is that it's theirs before it's yours.
Yeah, and I don't think that has any place in a free society. I don't think you need eminent domain at all. But if you have it, it has to be strictly limited, and the limitations have been weakened throughout the years. I don't know if Bush has accelerated the use of eminent domain much more than his recent predecessors, but he certainly has continued on the same path.
Okay, now Amendment 6, this might provide for a little bit of redundancy from the last one, but it's very important. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have previously been ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, and to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Now, you can just go ahead and take 10 minutes with this one, I guess.
Well, I'll be quick with this one, actually. There are a lot of ways that we can talk about this, but I think the easiest example is Guantanamo Bay. Now, in Guantanamo Bay, there are all these people being held as so-called enemy combatants. And they don't have the privileges of war criminals or the rights of the accused in criminal trial. And there's you know, even if we're going to go with the procedural rights that people have that I think often don't go far enough, these people are being they're being deprived of their procedural rights. Now, some of them might be, or a lot of them, or maybe most of them might be really bad people, but we can't have a society, or we shouldn't have a society, in which people can simply be called enemy combatants by the administration and then lose all their rights. If they're enemy combatants or terrorists, they should be shown in a court of law to be terrorists and to be criminals. The whole idea of due process and of the court system is that you're supposed to be proven guilty. And a lot of people say, well, this doesn't count because it's terrorist. Well, that seems, that's absurd. I mean,
well, what about the argument that it doesn't count because they're foreigners and they're arrested by our military on foreign land during a war?
Well, I mean, that's a sticky issue. I personally look at the Bill of Rights and I look at the way that it refers to persons and people, and it doesn't say American citizens. And if the U.S. government is going to go all around the world subjecting people to its authority, it should respect, you know, the procedural and actual rights of these people. You know, to the extent that our government is all over the world, you know, pushing people around, and it's, I mean, again, the historical context of this is that the Americans were being abused by the British government, because the British government also had this false dichotomy where there were the British citizens enjoyed a lot of rights that the American citizens saw themselves as being deprived of, and they thought, wow, the British tradition, they have the Magna Carta, they had the Glorious Revolution, and they have all of these this tradition of freedom and liberty, and they're depriving us because we're colonists. Well, in that sense, I think that our government should respect the rights of people, even if they don't live here. But there are other subtle ways in which the Sixth Amendment has been violated. I happen to think that the Sixth Amendment, like many others, has taken a major beating from the drug war, and George W. Bush certainly hasn't tempered the drug war at all. He's accelerated it. So there are other examples if people don't buy into the idea that foreigners should be these rights should apply to them.
Well, and also, you know, something that strikes me when I was reading this is, or that's terrible grammar, something that struck me when I was reading this to you a second ago is the part about the impartial jury in the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law. Now, that's the thing where, you know, declaring somebody an enemy combatant and giving them no trial at all, or maybe a military tribunal later on, that's not previously ascertained by law.
That's right. They push people all around. People are always moved away from the districts these days. So the Sixth Amendment, like the others, has become virtually meaningless. And I just remembered the example of Jose Padilla, who was a citizen, or is an American citizen, and he's been deprived of these rights, too. So his citizenship didn't save him. And, you know, under the Second Patriot Act that at first the government denied it was considering and then fessed up, the government has the power to just, it would potentially have the power just to strip citizenship away from anyone that it wants to. In that case, citizens, I don't really see any reason to think that they're going to stop at repressing people who are foreigners.
Well, and they admitted that the reason they turned Padilla over to the Navy was because they didn't have a case. They made up all this, frankly, complete bullshit about that he was going to set off a radioactive device, a dirty bomb, they call it. Except it turned out that he didn't have any connections to anybody, he didn't have any money, he didn't have any explosives, he had zero capability of being part of a dirty bomb plot. So then when the judge said, hey, bring this defendant before me, they said, sorry, we already turned him over to the Navy. So he didn't even get his hearing.
Yeah, that's right. I know people who say that, you know, that the criminal justice protections don't apply to these people because they're enemy combatants. And the prisoner of war protections don't apply to them because they're illegal combatants. Well, I don't think you can have it both ways. It's just, if they can, under this principle, the government can say anyone's an enemy combatant and strip away all that person's rights. And that has no place in America.
All right, now Amendment 7. In suits at common law where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Now, I actually found your little bit that you wrote about the Seventh Amendment quite interesting. Why don't you explain exactly what's going on with that?
Well, the purpose of the Seventh Amendment isn't just to protect the rights of people when they're being sued in court. It's also to protect our rights to sue. The idea was that, you know, after the before the American Revolution, the British officials would do all of these terrible things to American colonists, and they would try to have legal recourse, and the king would just set up these fake courts, and there's a clause in the Declaration of Independence about it, about how that, so the Seventh Amendment wasn't just about, you know, protecting your right to a jury when you're being sued, but if you're suing government agents for violence they've committed against you, you have a right to a jury of your peers. Well, we haven't followed this in quite a while. And there are several lawsuits against the Bush administration about his foreknowledge of 9/11. Now, I'm not saying that he had foreknowledge of 9/11, but I kind of doubt that these lawsuits are going to see the light of day in a real court. The ACLU has tried on numerous occasions to sue the government. Sometime in early 2002, the ACLU tried to get a list of detained suspects, and the Justice Department, just said no. Recently, the ACLU, there was a legal challenge against the Patriot Act, and this violates probably many provisions of the Bill of Rights, but the Patriot Act makes it, basically silences certain challenges against itself. If you challenge the Patriot Act, you can't even disclose to the public you've done so, and the ACLU was silenced for 3 weeks in respect to this. And again, like other...
Were they breaking the law when they finally came out, or was there the provision fulfilled and it was okay for them to come out and say that they had filed the lawsuit?
No, they didn't break the law. The ACLU, if I understand it correctly, they went along with the law, and they kept their challenge against the Patriot Act secret until they were allowed to disclose it. But, how scary is that? You complain about something the government's doing, and you're not even allowed to tell people about it? So I'd say there's a free speech issue there, too, but... There are other ways the Seventh Amendment has been violated. The middle amendments in the Bill of Rights kind of flow together in a lot of ways. Procedural rights in courts and so on. Life, liberty, and property without due process of law shouldn't be taken away, and they kind of run together. And so I don't have much else to say about the Seventh Amendment. There are, like the others, probably many subtle ways in which the Bush administration violated it, but... Those are my most convincing examples, I guess.
All right. Amendment number 8 says excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted.
Well, I think that the Eighth Amendment has... I mean, this one, people have subjective arguments. What's excessive? What's cruel and unusual? I think that for victimless crimes, pretty much any punishment is cruel and unusual, or it's cruel. I guess Bush has, and the other presidents of recent history have circumvented this by making cruel punishments usual. But, we saw Martha Stewart sentenced to prison for claiming innocence of a victimless crime, and now one of the officials who testified against her is in trouble for perjury. That's a big surprise. We saw Tommy Chong go to jail because his company manufactured glassware to be used for it was pitched for smoking marijuana with, and now the drug war has gone to the absurd point where even if you shape glass in a certain way, you're committing a crime. The FCC has gone out of control in how much it's fining people. Those are excessive fines. And one example that James Bovard's book alerted me to that people don't know about, the first person to be convicted under the Patriot Act was it's a low-profile case of this guy named Muhammad Hussein, and he had this money transmitting business that sent money to, I believe, Somalia, and he was convicted because basically the Patriot Act made it so if you didn't have a state license for certain money lending businesses, you were committing a federal crime. And the federal government didn't put an effort into telling people this. What was a standard procedure that might have been illegal on the books but was never enforced, that no one cared about, overnight became this federal crime. He received an 18-month prison sentence, and he was called a terrorist on television, and he had his business ruined. And I think that's cruel and unusual. So I think that, at least half the people in prison have been put there under cruel and unusual, by the Founding Fathers standards, circumstances for non-crime.
But well, not just the reasons that they're put there, but the way they're treated inside the prisons in a lot of places in America, it's not too much better than Abu Ghraib.
Oh, it's an outrage, yeah. The prison system is despicable. They put people in the same, they put rival gangs together and encourage fights. There's massive rape going on in the prisons, and I think that, you know, when someone's caught for marijuana or a gun charge or one of these victimless crimes, I mean, to say the least, I think for this is inhumane in pretty much any instance, but in these cases especially, to convict them to and send them to prison when you know that they have a good chance of being raped by a violent offender, and that's cruel, and it's inhumane, and it doesn't belong in a free country. Our prison system is disgusting. It's huge. We have the highest per capita prison population, I believe, in the world, and that's not compatible with a free society.
All right, now we only got a couple of minutes left here, so quickly, Amendment 9, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people.
Well, this one was to kind of tie up the Bill of Rights and say just because there are rights being listed doesn't mean you don't have your other rights. And Bush, you know, he's violated the right of self-medication by closing down medical marijuana facilities. He's interfered with our right to trade with other people peacefully by establishing his protectionist steel tariffs and by imposing sanctions. He just imposed a sanction on Syria. The sanction didn't work on Iraq, supposedly. So that's why the U.S. went to war, but now they're going to try a sanction on Syria. And, you know, he's disrupted the right of people to travel peaceably with a no-fly list, you know, in the airports if your name is on the list. And the circumstances for that are just ridiculous. I won't go into them, but if you're on this list of people, you know, you'll be hassled and you can't fly. There are a lot of rights that aren't listed in the Bill of Rights that have been violated.
All right, and the 10th Amendment, which should be the 1st Amendment, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people.
Oh, well, this one, you know, Republicans have, the more conservative, or fiscally conservative, I guess you call them, Republicans have said, you know, have always said the Constitution doesn't allow for the federal government to be involved in education or health care or farming, and they're right, but for some reason, a lot of them have turned a blind eye to Bush. He signed a record $190 billion farm bill. He pushed through the largest expansion of Medicare since it began. In fact, his prescription drug program is the biggest entitlement program since the Great Society. He signed the steel tariffs, as I said. He's, you know, championed faith-based initiatives. He's gotten the federal government to such a more involved in our lives, in our economic and personal activities, than any president in recent history. And he's just obliterated the entire idea that the government should have, federal government should have any limitations. The federal government has just gotten, you know, he's increased the budget of the Department of Education 70%. The Republicans used to say they wanted to get rid of the Department of Education altogether, and they, you know, that would be a good thing. there's no reason the federal government should be involved in education at all. It's not practical. It's a waste of money. And he's often criticized by a lot of leftists for having cut social programs. Well, that's just not true. Both conservatives and liberals want us to believe that, but it's not true. He's expanded social programs more than Clinton, at a faster rate than Clinton. And the only person he compares to in recent history is Lyndon Johnson, and he might even be worse than him.
And that's not a very nice thing to say about somebody. All right. I'm sorry, yeah. we're just straight out of time here. Everybody, Anthony Gregory, he works at the Independent Institute in Oakland. He writes for LouRockwell.com, Antiwar.com, Rational Review, Strike the Root, Liberty Magazine, and the Libertarian Enterprise. Thanks a lot for coming on the show to discuss the Bill of Rights with us today. I sure appreciate it.
Well, thanks, Phil, but it's been great.
All right, everybody, that was the Weekend Interview Show. Thank you for tuning in. Shouts out to Karen Katowski and Anthony Gregory. I hope to be running into them both next week at the Libertarian Convention in Atlanta, Georgia, where I will be live. It should be, I'm not exactly sure on the time, folks. I'll put it up on the guest book on 95.9.com, chaos959.com. But I believe it'll be an early show tomorrow, maybe from 1 to 3 here at Texas time. And I'm going to be interviewing Dr. Ron Paul. They call him Dr. No, the only congressman who's not a traitor in the entire House of Representatives, live next week from Atlanta, Georgia, on the Weekend Interview Show. Stay tuned. Shorty's up next. Play some punk rock.
Hey, yo! Snap out of it! It's time for you to act your age. No, you're never gonna get your way. So break it to a screaming rage. As good as this is not a non-stop teenage romance. Turn it all into lust. I'm only looking for somebody to talk to. Somebody that I could trust. There's no such thing. There's no such thing.